So, hi everybody, how are you? This is like church. You all are so quiet. It's kind of hard to sit here and just, come on, wake up, let's participate. So, I'm going to talk to you a little bit about a model that we've been implementing in Kansas for 4 years now. We're going to show you a little bit of data on the two sites that have been the longest running. This is a collaborative model that brings together prenatal clinical care and prenatal education. The primary goal is to improve birth outcomes in the state of Kansas. I have nothing to disclose. Here's what we're going to be discussing. I want you to understand the leading issues in Kansas, just a very brief snapshot. You're going to learn a little bit about the Healthy Babies Are Worth the Wait, Becoming a Mom program model. You'll understand the community collaborative model and its role within a collective impact framework. And then we're going to talk about the role of evaluation for program quality improvement. So here's the Kansas snapshot. Infant mortality 6.3 per 1,000 live births. Birth defects, preterm birth, low birth weight, and sudden unexplained infant death are the leading causes of infant mortality in our state. And our black infant mortality rate is twice that of white. I will also tell you that we have many rural and frontier or pioneer communities in our state, and they have disparity rates approaching 3-to-1 in some of those counties. Our preterm birth rate is 10.8%. You can see the disparity amongst the racial ethnic populations. Smoking, 21.5% among women of childbearing age. That's not as bad as many of our adjoining states, but I will tell you it's nothing we're proud of. It's something that we consider to be low-hanging fruit in addressing. And then Medicaid pays for 45% of all births in our state. Priorities in our state. We're trying to lower the preterm birth rate by 8% by 2020 as part of the ASTO challenge. We have set a goal of 10% reduction by 2016 in our infant mortality rate as part of the COIN blueprint. I will tell you the COIN blueprint has also upped the preterm birth rate to 10%. Our secretary said if we're going to do 10% for one, we need to do 10% for the other. Our priorities in that COIN blueprint are improving access and quality of our prenatal care services, launching community collaboratives in high-need areas, and that's what I'm going to be talking with you about, statewide expansion of Healthy Babies Are Worth the Wait, Becoming a Mom, our Safe Sleep campaign, High Five for Baby, which is a hospital-based breastfeeding initiative, and then increasing our rates or our usage of the tobacco quit line and associated referral services. Here's March of Dimes' response. For quite a few years, our chapter had done grant funding each year, and we would do, we called it the flavor of the year. We'd do 4 or 5 programs for a 12-month time frame, congratulate everybody, tell them they did a great job, and we'd move to 4 or 5 different programs the following year. What we realized is we were leaving the party just as the party was getting good. And we weren't able to get program evaluation because we were leaving the party just as they were getting ready to actually start evaluating effectively what they'd been doing. The other piece is we also realized that many of the projects we had funded died at the end of that 1 year time frame because they didn't have enough time or the opportunity to get either funding or infrastructure underneath the program. So we changed to strategic mission investment, where we fund on a 3-year duration at a minimum. We look at communities that have demonstrated disparities. And for us, disparities is not just racial ethnic disparity. We also look at that whole low income, low socioeconomic cohort group as a disparate group because that is the cohort that has the worst birth outcomes in our state. And I believe it's probably the same for almost all, if not all, in the United States. We also look for communities that have a significant number of births. They may have abysmal disparity rates, but if they only have 10 or 12 births within the course of a year, that's not where we're going to invest grant funding or encourage our partners to invest grant funding. But what we will do for those communities is look at regional approaches where we can get them better access to services. The last piece is a community collaborative backbone. Are they willing to play in the sandbox nicely with their peers and with other agencies and organizations in their community? If they have the first two pieces and they're not willing to do the third, we pat them on the back, we tell them thank you very much, and we'll come talk to you next year and see if you're ready to play together. so we do not fund unless all three pieces are in place. The community collaborative model, you know, this is just common sense. And I honestly think that it's taken off as well as it has just because of the ratcheting down of funding since 2008. And out of sheer necessity, folks had to learn to work together. So it's a relationship between two or more parties, and they're working on common goals, shared responsibility and authority, accountability, and shared benefits and shared recognition for the results. So what we look for in this collaborative strategy, they have to have the intent to change the way they're going to deliver their prenatal care services. That's really what happens if this works, and it works well. And neither of the partners or any of the partners individually could achieve the same outcomes that they can working together or collectively. This is a social ecological model that the CDC is using for a lot of their MCH programs, and it actually fits very well with what we've been doing. At the core, of course, is the individual who's the primary beneficiary or recipient. On the interpersonal level, you've got your primary care providers, friends, family, community health workers. Then you move to that organizational level. That's where the state health department, as well as the county health departments, community-based organizations, our Medicaid providers, private insurance, that's where they all come into play. And these are all levels or partners that have a dog in this fight. They all need to be part of this collective solution. At the community level, you've got faith-based partners, you've got coalitions. We've had quite a few coalitions, perinatal coalitions, that have been developed in communities as a result of this process. You've got federally qualified health centers. They need to be integrally involved in this. They are the primary service provider for the Medicaid population, and they're receiving the bulk of the Medicaid funding for services delivered. So you've got quite a few at this community level that are coming together to redesign the way prenatal care services are delivered. The top piece is really important. That's the policy level. That's where everything has to have an eye on what's the state plan, what's the COIN blueprint for reducing infant mortality, what's in the ASTO challenge. We're doing an AMCHIP pilot in our state, looking at asset and resource mapping community by community so that we can begin to transition to regional models. But everything has to have an eye on what's the state plan, because a lot of the funding that comes into these community collaboratives comes from state and federal pass-through resources. Benefits of collaboration. We are creating permanent MCH infrastructure. In every single solitary community, we're creating infrastructure that did not exist. And I'm going to talk to you about the benefits of that in a minute. All the resources are leveraged for greater benefit. So when we talk about sharing resources, we're not talking about people putting their money on the table. We're talking about them taking the things that they already have funding to do and leveraging that along with partners to cover those gaps for things that cannot be provided by one institution. So it could be staffing, it could be space for an educational program, it could be childcare or transportation vouchers, it could be food sources. So it's leveraging everything towards the center. It's sharing those resources so that everybody is benefiting that same target population. We're changing the care delivery paradigm in every one of these communities. We have long-term program sustainability because what we do is we fund for a three-year duration. We start at $20,000 a site in year one. We diminish by a third each year. By the time they've hit that third year, the way they're delivering the services has changed. So there's no longer a need for our soft dollar support to continue to feed this, because what they've done is they've fully institutionalized this as a community and changed the way they're delivering their services. The other benefit to this is emerging needs are identified quickly, and solutions are also created with the stakeholders much more readily than if they wait for something to happen and everybody goes, oh my God. So when you know that a funding cut is coming, for instance, from the state, the whole group has the opportunity to think through, okay, so if this is going to happen, what are we going to do? How are we going to respond? How are we going to fill that gap? The collaborative becomes the vehicle for change. It's really important that Everyone understands that because you've got the right people in the room, because you've got all aspects of MCH care that are part of these collaboratives, anytime they know something isn't working well or there's a new emerging issue, it becomes a vehicle for change. And an unforeseen benefit of these is this has become a great magnet for funding opportunities in every community where we have these up and running. The Title V funding is now being leveraged so that it will support development of these collaborative programs and to pay for the prenatal care. We have a foundation in Kansas that wanted to invest funding for femur replications. And so they went to these different community collaboratives, and they're the only ones they solicited requests for proposals from. So these are definitely becoming magnets for funding opportunities. It's shared risk, shared resources, and shared rewards. So what is healthy babies are worth the wait? HBWW is a March of Dimes signature program. It's sort of our umbrella that overarches this entire project. It has six key strategies, which cover hospital quality improvement, community intervention programs, public policy, consumer awareness, provider and patient education. So it tries to hit everything from all the different areas and all the different levels. Built into our program, the backbone is the Becoming a Mom prenatal education curriculum. This is a bilingual curriculum, Spanish and English, and it can be customized by using resources that reflect the population that you're serving. So we have Caucasian, African American, and Hispanic resources that match up with these different courses or classes. There are 9 sessions, 9 topic areas. However, in Kansas, we've collapsed this into 6 classes because realistically, we are not going to get these women for 9 months of their pregnancy to come into classes. So all of our sites use the same 6-class model. We, in this curriculum, we have lesson plans. We have downloadable resources that come with it. So everything that you would use with your women, you actually can print yourself. It's a very, very cost-effective program for prenatal education. In our state, it has a twofold focus. We call it two sides of the coin. We've got the prenatal education and the prenatal or clinical care. And we don't fund projects that don't do both sides. It's got to be a partnership and that both pieces have to be part of this. It's an incentive-based program, so women may receive incentives at each class that are appropriate to the class topic. For instance, if it's healthy eating, it may be a gift card to the grocery store or to the market that they have during the summer with fresh produce. And then what they do is they accumulate points every time they attend a class when they're in compliance with their clinical care. So if they get their sonogram, if they do a smoking cessation program, whatever their clinical care requirements are, but they accumulate points for a big ticket item at the end. Our Safe Sleep campaign is built into this, and so one of those big ticket items is a Safe Sleep crib that they have the choice to choose from. They also could pick a car seat, or they could pick strollers, or any number of things that each community solicited and brought in. The incentives are actually the easiest piece to pull together. What we found is our sites build in a pretty good piece of their budget up front to pay for that, but they realize within a few months that the other partners all have things that they can bring to the table for the incentives. So in every single site, we've gotten follow-ups that said, can we move that money to something else because we figured out how to get that covered. The incentives, we call it just bold-faced bribery, but they work. The curriculum is March of Dimes evidence-based curriculum. It's been tested in many different states. We have standardized delivery. What we realized early on is we had sites doing 12 classes. We had sites doing 9. We had sites doing 6. Well, we wanted to standardize our evaluation system. We couldn't do it. We were doing apples to oranges, so everybody does the delivery of the program with the same basic model. And in this standardized evaluation system, we've worked with Kansas University and Wichita State, and Nikki Woods is here. Nikki, she is one of our evaluators. So if you guys have questions about the evaluation piece when we get to that, Nikki's going to help with that. We couldn't do this without evaluation partners. This wasn't something we tried. We tried to do this on our own, failure miserably in the first year. So the evaluation partners were essential. So here are our collective impact in action and our growth strategies. So the state health department has funded, we did our initial pilot, we replicated in four other communities. The state has stepped up. They've actually provided 3 years of funding to support two more regional rollouts of this for 3 years apiece. And so we've got regional models in the work. We've got unfunded sites in the work that we've trained and provide technical assistance to. We're looking at policy changes to support financing this. And again, this is becoming a funding magnet. Program evaluation. We do participant-level evaluation, pre- and post-tests, as well as birth outcome data coming from medical charts. And we look at the community-level evaluation, trying to evaluate the sustainability, the viability, and the development of these community collaboratives themselves. Our core components for the evaluation, we look at universal class structure delivery, standardized tools. Data collectors are trained at every site. We realized that it wasn't enough to tell them, here's what you have to do. We really needed to train them to be able to do it. We provide technical assistance ad hoc and have biannual grantee meetings so that we can really look at quality improvement and what's happening in each site. We have participation, of course, incentivized, trying to get women to a minimum of four of the six classes. Every site does monthly data submission, and then we have biannual reports to each site as well as biannual aggregated reports. We use the community toolbox for the community level data. And these are just a couple of examples of what we have in some of the pie charts, some of the data coming out of the community toolbox. They look at who their cross-sector collaborators are. This can help them identify if they've got an issue or need, who they may need to bring to the table to be a partner. We look at the goal of the collaborations, what their specified goal is. This one, I can tell you, has a higher pie piece for creating a sustainable service model because these two sites that are built into this were coming into their final years of funding, so they were really looking at what they were going to do to sustain long term. We also look at where their financial support is coming from. That helps them to identify where they may be missing a sector for support. At the program level, we first piloted in 2012. We modified in 2013. There's about 100 questions on the pre- and post-knowledge survey. We do the pre-test at the beginning, the post-test at the conclusion, and we look at both participation numbers as well as program satisfaction from the participants. I just want to show you a couple of slides with our data. These are the participant level, the knowledge-based data. We're seeing some pretty significant improvements in terms of their knowledge base. These are only a handful of the data sets. There are a few things that we did not see statistically significant improvement, but they were already very high in what they knew or they understood. These were ones that we thought were very important. The baby's brain growth and development, of course, gets at early elective deliveries. And then signs of preterm labor, huge, huge improvement in their knowledge base. And then safe sleep habits, which, of course, is because we integrated the entire safe sleep campaign into this. Improved birth outcomes. You guys, this is awesome. Fewer preterm births, 9.5 compared to 11%. Low birth weight babies, improvements. Lower C-section rates, very, very thrilled with that. And that, of course, ties back to the early elective deliveries because over 50% of our inductions result in C-sections. Higher breastfeeding initiation, it's not as good as it could be, but it's an area that we're focusing on. And look at our infant mortality rates for these two communities that are in this cohort group. These are three-year trend data, so 8.5 from 6 to 6.4% previous in the 2008 to 2012 cohort. Gary went from 10 to 8.3. Now, we can't tell you that these are the only reasons that we've seen these improvements, but I can tell you in every community where we've got these collaboratives up and running, because there are so many diverse stakeholders in place, because so much is being leveraged towards the center, towards the individual woman, we know that this is a key piece of the impact in that community because everybody's piece and part is coming together. Lessons learned. create a pilot for replication. The stakeholders and the money will follow. What you do is you work out all the bugs up front, and you end up with something that you can actually take out and market and sell. You can get foundations to support it, and you can get other communities to sign on and buy into it. The collaborative model works, but it takes constant nurturing. I spend more time in my communities providing technical assistance for the collaborative build-out and maintenance than I do sometimes for the actual program implementation, and it's worth every minute that we invest in it. The community customization increases the impact, and it provides a vehicle for change and for identifying emergent issues. Of course, on the evaluation end, you've got to have the program standardization, and you've got to get your evaluation mechanism set up when you start the program. You can't wait till you're a year in or you're in your third year. You need to have that built in up front so that it can also be dynamic and it can grow and evolve as your programs change. And that's it.
Thank you very much. And now we can open the floor for questions. There were some that were starting in the first section. You want it?
So my question is for, I have two, but I'm going to ask the first one if we have time. For our first ladies, when you looked at your variation, where you saw the biggest, you know, the 18%, the state level, and the, you know, 30, 40%, were those the places where you had the highest penetration back down at medical centers? And on the flip side, were they also maybe the places you had the highest penetration of nurse midwives and non-NDO versus the work that I've done has actually shown both of those things independently seem to change your VBACs because of the, you know, maybe the risk tolerance that
Yeah, so we didn't actually look at that in this analysis, but you bring up important questions, and I have read similar research indicating, of course, that nurse midwives tend to have higher feedback rates than academic hospitals. Yeah. There's reason to believe that that is.
Yes.
It's hard to hear you. Could you just speak up just a wee bit? That's
yeah.
Okay.
I have two questions. My first question is, using the system of calling, how many times should you call, like in the process of the pregnancy?
Okay. By design, the health worker called the husband of the claims a day before the next ANC schedule, antenatal schedule. But what happened is that at advanced gestation, maybe above 36 weeks of gestation, the call is more frequent so that to prepare demand effectively and the whole family for facility delivery. One, two, to find out if there's any emergency during that period because that's a perimeter period. But basically, the call schedule is tied to antenatal schedule.
Now that at least you've been able to engage the husband, I think it would be nice to use the opportunity to then educate them on contraceptive and then really having gap in having the baby. Because I know they have a very high rate of having children in that part of, you know, of the country. So, because that's another issue, maybe that's an opportunity now that you've been engaged. And the last question, I'm sorry, does religion and education have an impact on that contraceptive and the empowerment of women in that part of Nigeria? Because it's a pretty difference in the southern part and the northern part. Is it because of religion and education? No.
Thank you very much. In terms of adding additional intervention to what we are already engaging them for, that's a very important, and that is the next step. You are absolutely correct. The issue of a contraception is very important. We are looking at the possibility of adding that to discuss with the men as well. And with regards to the issue of religion, you know, there is a lot of social determinants of health issues up north. Of course, it's only I did not show it there. There is issue of a level of education of the women in the south different from that of north as well. Of course, the issue of religion, And when we talk about region, it's probably the perception because they are Muslim partners. And at the same time, they are Muslim themselves as well. And the language is changing when it comes to contraception, for instance. Now, up north, people tend to use more of a child spacing than reduction. The focus is more of child spacing up north rather than reduction in the family size as well. So that is the language that is being used up north. But you are absolutely correct. The next step is to incorporate contraceptive information to the old stuff.
Thank you. Question?
Question. The picture you showed had a woman make the call, but did you look to see if it made a difference if a man or a woman made the call?
Okay, good question. We have not looked at that, but I think it is important. We'll look at if there is going to be any difference. Very important to look at it. Yeah. The only thing we know is that it becomes an issue if a woman goes out to go and discuss with the man. It's going to make a lot of a difference because culturally, intermingling between man and woman is not actually. But we'll look at what difference will it make if the conversation is back home.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Good. It's a good point. Another question.
Very much. Like I said earlier on, we are still at the very preliminary stage of the pilot. There are more questions than answers. But what I can tell you is that it's quite amazing how this very simple intervention is changing the view of the men. They are quite receptive. It's only very few cases where the health worker did not handle the issue very well. That is where we reported the issue of somebody being resistant to call and becoming more defensive about it. But the approach of the health worker, the level of the motivation of the health worker is very, very important. It's a very good determinant of success.
Yes.
I have a question for Dr. Casper. So I'm from North Carolina, and we used to have an NCC program, although I believe it was implemented. I feel like y'all's implementation is a little more robust than us. And we have moved away from the NCC model, and now we're moving toward another home model where the point is to try to produce birth out. So I'm curious, in your MCC model, if you seem to involve a lot of things that we also involve in our pregnancy medical home with assessments, and you know, we have care managers who are calling these women, are you planning to do any kind of evaluation, or have you done an evaluation on whether your MCC program is improving birth outcomes in any way? I saw a lot of sort of responses about how women feel about the program, but I'm not sure if there's anything yet about actual outcomes.
No, that's an excellent question. Are you at the VA or?
No, I'm at Community Care Breastline. We work with Medicaid coverage.
Oh, okay. So that is definitely something that we need to do. So one of the challenges that we're actually working on now, one of the things about the VA is they have a very excellent electronic record, but what we are thinking about at the national level, and I'm not involved with that thinking, so I've only heard about it, is how to set us up so that there is a way for communication between these non-VA providers and their medical records and our medical records to know birth outcomes. And to, we can, of course, you know, ask the women themselves, and that's something that that would be definitely of interest. So thank you for bringing
that up. I would love to hear your thoughts on that.
Oh, thank you.
Okay. Question in the back. It's hard to hear you.
Yeah, that was part of the whole call log. We worked very hard over the last 3 years to try to think about the tools that would make our maternity care coordinators effective. So we created a call log, which has gone through a lot of iterations, but on it, they are in the script. So we have these scripts. We call them suggested scripts because we know that eventually, once they really understand what they're supposed to be covering, they're going to use their own voice, which is more natural anyway. But we have the guides so that they make sure that they see the main points. And then if there's a difficult conversation, such as fetal demise, which they may never do the whole time, hopefully, there, or they may, that they can go to that script and just use it. What was your question again? I haven't had any.
Preset timing. For
calls. Yes. So in the call log, we have them once they get the estimated due date, they go ahead and fill in the approximate times for each of these calls, and then there's also a column for them to put in the next call, and they are supposed to make an appointment with the patient. The first one is like a cold call, but after that, then they try to, and if they do reach them and they can't talk, they try to set up an appointment for a future conversation. So that's an excellent point. Thank you.
I live in Mississippi and part of the breastfeeding forum. The north and south, Dr. Pedroia, that was so apparent on contraception users. With breastfeeding, there is that lactation analia that is practiced in several areas, and I was wondering if the breastfeeding rate was higher down below, and they were using lactation analia, which gives that space between children. And also, when you do telephone calls, that might be another area to promote breastfeeding with the men to get their support. So, are you familiar with the rate of breastfeeding north and south?
No, I'm not. Dr. Amina, are you familiar with that? Difference in the rate of breastfeeding north and south.
Okay.
We probably have time for one more question.
Mm-hmm.
That's an excellent point. We're just expanding now to all of our all of our healthcare system across our national healthcare system. But I agree with you that I think the personal touch is very valuable. Of course, the next step would also be to evaluate our moms and see, we're having the secondhand information that our maternity care coordinators are getting this very, warm response from their patients, but it would be interesting to find out if the women, what the women think of their care management and of their experience altogether. And part of the reason that I think this program got started was that, well, there's a couple things going on. One, we have a very large increase in the number of women veterans. We have a very young population now, women who served in Afghanistan and Iraq, with a whole conglomeration of different kinds of difficulties and challenges, mental health issues, et cetera, having served in a conflict zone. And we were we've been paying for them to go out to receive their services because there was such a small number that were having babies that we didn't have the OB services, but we really want to know what's happening with them outside and make sure that they continue their care within the VA and are fully serviced. So that's an excellent suggestion. So, you know, you're trying to get to this national level, but thank you. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. And why don't we give our speakers another round of applause?